Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskan. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Voskan provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Voskan, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 255, the post-genocide commemoration edition of The Next Step. This is a podcast that looks at life and love while even at genocide, so we run the full gamut. And we're glad that you're with us today because we're going to be doing a lot of next stepping today. Talking about next steps, actually, this is where we begin. We look at life through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. So, sit back, relax, and let's take the next step. Hey, glad to have you with us today. Those feet, yeah, doesn't that sound good, huh? He's like running from one side of the studio to the next. I could do that too, you know. My feet aren't that tired. Yesterday, Armenian Genocide Commemoration, we did a walk, a 10-mile walk, 17.5 kilometers from the city of Pasadena. We went through six different small little towns, cities you want to call them, and we got to the city of Montebello, where the Armenian Genocide Memorial is built. Actually, that is the only genocide memorial that is built on public space here in the United States. So that was something, and it was a very emotional one for me. But, you know, as I was saying a couple seconds ago, I guess, in the introduction, you know, this is where the next step really began, and the entire idea of genocide, how you commemorate it and then answer back to it, was the foundation for In His Shoes. And this was about 10 years ago, we came up with the concept of In His Shoes, walking in his shoes, as an answer to genocide. It's not like you can say, okay, something horrific as a genocide happened and we're just going to commemorate it. Well, that's nice. How long does your commemoration continue? How many years can you do that? We're hitting almost 100 years of commemoration on the Armenian genocide. But there has to be a substantial response to it, and certainly the In His Shoes movement has proven that, you know, it is viable, it can do it. And and yesterday we walked in his shoes. We walked in his shoes. We walked from Pasadena to Montebello raising funds for Darfuri kids, because, you know, there's not much you can do about the Armenian genocide 100 years later. You can remember it, but you can certainly make sure that now that it's happening to other people, that we're the first voice out there. We're the first people taking those steps to help those people. So we walked yesterday, and let's see. I like the 17.5 kilometers. First of all, it makes us sound more international, and it certainly adds the numbers, right? Kilometers always give you a larger number than the miles, so it sounds more impressive. But yesterday we did something different, too. We called it, we're walking in his shoes, but rather than a big organization, actually, we threw it out there, hoping that people would adopt it. It could be something that anybody can walk and anybody can do. And so yesterday my wife Susan and Susie, our producer, our esteemed producer, we went out on this walk, the three of us. We went through these towns and everything. It took us about 4 hours to complete the entire walk. There was probably the last part was a little bit the most strained, because it was an uphill battle against some of the terrain here in Southern California. But we got to the Armenian Genocide Memorial Monument. Now, this monument, I'm sure you've seen it, it's iconic. They began construction on it in 1965. actually the thoughts about it. Now, this is an interesting one. If you've been following me on Next Step, you know why it's interesting. 1965, right in the middle of the civil rights movement here in the United States. And I do remember as a child, although, you know, skin-wise, we're white, but as Armenians, you definitely know that you are a minority. You're something a little bit different out there. And we felt it. And what was interesting about Dr. King's movement was this acceptance that was okay to be different. And so the term black is beautiful came out. What do we call it? A slogan, you know, black is beautiful, that it's okay to be black. It's okay to be African American. It permeated into the other ethnic groups. So I remember they were saying, okay, brown is beautiful. And Armenians would say, it's okay to be Armenian, like we can talk about it. And listen to this, that 1965, that if it wasn't for Martin Luther King, I don't think we would have had the ability to really go ahead and pull off a monument like that. And certainly my father, I'm very proud of this. Yesterday, in fact, it was very emotional for me, because on that monument, there's a small little plaque, and it has the inscription of the committee, the original committee that constructed that, and my father's name is on there, and I was able to go and touch that small little plaque. It was an emotional moment for me that, you know, after 98 years of a genocide we've commemorated, here is a grandson of the genocide survivors whose father built this thing. And, you know, there's that whole emotional feeling too, and it was a very, very special day for me yesterday. And on top of it, to be able to give something of yourself, to be able to walk. Yeah, there's not too much you can do, but to be able to walk, to raise a few funds. We walked in his shoes, that whole concept of, I can't do anything about the Armenian genocide today, but I can certainly make sure that as genocide is happening tragically to other people, I'm out there. I'm the first voice out there. I'm the first step out there to help them. And so we raised some funds, not too much. Hey, if you're inclined to donate, you know, get on the In His Shoes website and press that donate button. But no matter what it was, it's going to Darfur. It's going to a small little group called the Little Ripples, who provide education resources and education opportunities for children that are in refugee camps in Chad, in refugee camps for people who have escaped the Darfuri genocide. Now think about that for a moment, okay? I could only wish that somebody had done that for my grandparents. I could only wish that somebody had extended, at least thought about them over there, out on the Syrian desert, going out there. Hundreds of thousands of Armenians just being marched out into this Syrian desert. I could have only wished that the world's attention was on it, but basically the world ignored it. There was, for a variety of reasons, I'm not going to get into it. It was an ignored genocide. Well, guess what? There's a genocide going on right now in Darfur that is basically ignored. And does it sound familiar? Yeah, it does. So who should pay attention to it if not the Armenians? We've got to be the first people. First people out there who are saying something about it. Okay, a small little step, a small little walk from Pasadena to Montebello, raising awareness, raising a few funds. And the whole idea yesterday became that, okay, instead of doing it as a mass group, what if we can start doing it virtually? We have this power. We have the ability to connect a larger community, such as the Apostle community. I mean, you're listening to this. You're a part of the community. When I walk, when I pray, you are on my mind, you listeners. So you've written to me. You share your lives with me. You share your expressions. And trust me, yesterday as we're walking, I'm thinking about all of this. I'm thinking about you. You're with me there. We're walking together. And how beautiful it could be if we can start this movement in his shoes, to walk in the shoes of others everywhere, so that it's 3 people here, 10 people there, it's 1 person over there, it's 20 people elsewhere. But the idea is that we start changing the way people approach such horrific events such as genocide. I mean, tonight I'm going to be out in Santa Barbara. This is up the coast up here. I'm going to be speaking to a bunch of college kids. And this is the idea that I want to impress upon them, because it's not enough to just complain. Sadly, today is April 25th, and it's a day, one day off of the genocide. Trust me, yesterday it was phenomenal, because if you're on Facebook with a lot of Armenian friends, everybody's like blogging different pictures, different memories, different stories of the genocide, which is beautiful. But I guarantee you, I haven't opened Facebook yet today, but you look at it, and I'm sure that, in fact, I'm positive of it. Everybody's back to their old jokes, and their old, well, I ate at this place, hey, take a look at me, don't I look great, look at my grandkids, look at this and that, you know. And basically, it's a once-a-year event, remembrance of the Armenian Genocide. And it can't be. It can't be. It's got to be something that you live, and certainly In His Shoes is a way to live that out, to walk in the shoes. You know, we always try to strive for peace. We're always talking about this is the ultimate, like, peace on earth, right? Peace on earth. How do you get peace? Well, you can talk about love. You can talk about we have to love one another. Well, what is the mechanism to that love? It's understanding. It's respect for the other person. And you don't get that respect until you can put your foot in his shoes. To feel what they are going through. To feel their pain. And Armenians, interestingly enough, in common Armenian language, you go to Armenia especially in Armenia, there's an expression. They say, Tsavatanem, let me take your pain. Let me understand your pain. It is such a fundamental Armenian idea. And I tell you, it comes from Armidoxy. It comes from Armidoxy. It comes to us from our roots. So we have an opportunity now to really act on that fundamental idea of in his shoes, walking in his shoes. So there's a challenge out there for you. I mean, yesterday we walked out there and it was good. We raised a few dollars. We're raising awareness. We talked about it. But can we do this all around? Can we get in his shoes to that point? Well, to that end, I'm glad, because this is the greatest thing of traveling with your producer. We put together a small little opportunity for us. And it's basically to change our perspective. And that's going to be coming up. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to see if Susie will sit in front of the microphone maybe next week. I don't know. I can't promise you this, but this might be nice, okay, because she's such a background person, okay, but maybe I can get her in front of the microphone, and we can share with you what we're going to be doing with the next step. It's going to be a new campaign, and I'm very excited about it. It's a campaign that involves all of you, our listeners. It involves everyone. It's an idea of, can we, well, we've got 100 years, right, of commemoration. Can we change that dialogue? Can we talk about something different? So listen for that next week. And, you know, I'm not throwing that out as a teaser. I know you as Next Step listeners know what I'm talking about. It's a matter of backing up your words with action. So let's make those words real. Rather than talking about intangibles or things that aren't attainable, let's talk about things that we can do right now. And there is nothing I can do about history. I cannot change history. Well, I could, I guess, if I had enough money, if I had enough political power, I could get out there and try to rewrite history, right? But the truth is the truth, and there are a set of events that did take place. And so I can't change those events, but I can change what's going on in the world right now. And certainly we have that power. Certainly God gives us that power as each human being that is created with unique talents, with unique abilities. You put those unique abilities together, think about the things that you can do. That's the power of what we call the church, the body of Christ. Christ being complete, perfect, and us being imperfect, well, you put yourselves together and you get everybody together, and you got different components that work towards that perfection. And you can work towards that perfection. We can be a part of that entire experience. So, like I said, that's coming up. And you're going to like it, actually. It's just a way of defining ourselves. Okay, let's see what we got today. We got tired feet, but besides that, we've got Anish coming up with her pomegranate seeds in just a few minutes. And I'm going to be sharing with you some of the things that took place during this genocide commemoration within the church setting. Yes, I was at a church gathering. There was... it was the eve. It was called the vigil service, which took place with the celebration of the divine liturgy. And I'm going to share with you some of the expressions that took place over there. Right now, how about a song? I'm going to play a completely, totally nationalistic song. And I know we got a lot of listeners who don't understand Armenia. What I want you to do is listen to the tempo, listen to the beat, listen to the inflections that this, the singer, and I shouldn't say this singer, this is Hovhannes Badalyan. This is the classics of the classics. You can't get any more classic than this, okay? Hovhannes Badalyan doing Hayenk Menk, which is We Are Armenian. It is like a powerful song that rallies up the troops. But in his singing, listen to the inflections, listen to what's going on. It's a very exciting song, and it's the one that I've picked out for this day after the Armenian Genocide commemoration.
Hayenk menk erpajner, hayenk menk, hayenk menk urel vor menk linenk, patvakan u asniv, hayenk menk, azgov tantrats mtarapats, hayenk menk, այս միշտոքում հարատևով հայենք մենք, ազգտանչված ու տարապած հայենք մենք, այս միշտոքում հարատևով հայենք մենք. Մեր հողում միշտ ամբեր չանդատրում, երբ հային ոսովներ կոտորում, խերջ հայը օգնություն էր խնդրում, բայց ոչ մի ազգօգնության ձեր չեր մեկնում. Հայոց հողում հայի արյուն էր խոսում, բայց ոչ մի ազգօգնության ձեր չեր մեկնում. Հայոց հողում հայի արյուն էր խոսում. Եկեք մենք եղբայրներ միանանք, որ հզոր մի ազգել մենք դառնանք, պատմական մեր երկրին տիրանանք, հզորում մեծ Հայաստանին տեր դառնանք, աշխարհով մեկ ծրված ազգով տուն դառնանք, հզորում մեծ Հայաստանին տեր դառնանք, աշխարհով մեկ ծրված ազգով տուն դառնանք. Հայենք մենք եղբայրներ, հայենք մենք, հայենք մենք ուրել որ մենք լինենք, մեր արդար դատապիտ պաշտպանենք, ու մեր ազնի բարի կամքով բարձենանք, Հայոց հողում մի ամրակ ուր վեր դառնանք, եկեք հայե ուսուսի տանք ամրանանք, ազատանք Հայաստանում բացենանք.
Okay, I thought I'd play something a little bit different today. That is Hovhannes Badalyan doing Hayenk Menk. That is one of the traditional. I mean, you could tell from the musical instruments that were being used, very folksy folk instruments, and you're talking about being Armenian. In the wake of genocide, you know, you have a created diaspora, and in this diaspora, you have this search for identity. So many of these songs became the calling cards, became ways of rallying the troops and keeping that identity alive in that diaspora. So these songs have sociological value as well as just beautiful musical value too, don't you agree? Anyway, we'll put a link on our show notes so you could check out Hovhannes Badalyan and his music. Okay, well, let me tell you about another musical event that I went to, and I don't mind saying it that way. It was the Divine Liturgy, and it became almost a musical event because they brought in this big choir, and my favorite was the deacon who was my spiritual, we call him Khardavilag. I guess he was the sponsor, the one who sponsored me into the priesthood. It was Father Arshak. Ah, the guy's voice is incredible, and he's past 70, but you got to hear that voice could compete against the best. So we had a divine liturgy. Now, let me back up a little bit. Here in the Southern California area, you have a multitude of different Armenian organizations and Armenian religious groups. Now, you have the Armenian Orthodox Church. You also have Armenian Catholics. You also have what's called the Armenian Evangelists. They're basically offshoots of Protestantism. You also have, within the Armenian Church, two different jurisdictions that are functioning. You basically have the Armenian Apostolic Church, which is Echmiadzin, and then you have a jurisdiction that's been a remnant of the Cold Era, and that is the jurisdiction that is under Antilias. So you've got basically four different groups, let's call them. And so once a year they get together, despite what they do the rest of the year, once a year they get together for this beautiful spiritual awakening, let's call it. And I want to say concert, because it was like a concert. It's void of spirituality except when you can lose yourself in it. If you go there looking for the players and looking at the players, you just lose it. You there's nothing there. But if you lose yourself, you can really come away from this experience really spiritually renewed. I never go to these things. I never go because I have a really hard time sitting and doing the Divine Liturgy, celebrating the Divine Liturgy, the Holy Eucharist, with the pretense that it's being done as a unity, and then on as a means of unity, and then on the next day, April 25th, you've lost that unity among those groups. But this year I had to go for a variety of reasons, for some personal that I had to deal with, and I went and I sat there and I observed and wanted to share some of those feelings with you. Now, the Divine Liturgy, beautifully sung, as I said. They had the choir, the Khachaturian choir from the Western Diocese. This is taking place at the Western Diocese Cathedral, the St. Leon Armenian Cathedral in Burbank. And the celebrant was the bishop from the Antilias, which is the House of Cilicia, the what they call the prelate. Now, this works in English. There's a primate and a prelate. And in Armenian, it doesn't work. It's called Arachnort, which means the leader. So the bishop from the prelacy, or from the Antilias faction, was the celebrant. The bishop from the Echmiadzin Mother Church was the preacher this year. And they swap it out every year. It's one or the other at different venues, different churches. And then they had the leader of the Armenian Catholic Church, who was going to say a few words, and they had the leader or the organizer, I think he's called a moderator, of the Armenian Protestants, who got up and said a few words. So basically, let's give a little bit of attention to everybody at this sacred thing called the Divine Liturgy. Fine. You kind of feel where I'm at, okay? But I want to share with you. First of all, the music was beautiful. It was like concert-esque. The singing was gorgeous. Whether you felt prayer, whether you felt the presence of God, is completely up to you, okay? You go there, right? You have the choice of looking around. You have a choice of seeing all the players, and it's very unavoidable. They're right in front of you. You had the clergy from both, and actually from all these different areas. They came together. Okay. So the one thing that does change, though, is the message that's being given. So I want to skip, fast forward to the message. Okay. The message is now being given. And I thought this was very, very interesting. The Catholic bishop got up. Now, this is Armenian Catholic, so they are under Pope Francis. The bishop got up and he thank people for coming. And you know what he talked about? Each of them had maybe about 3 or 4 minutes that they had an opportunity to express. And then, of course, the main homily, the main sermon, was given by the designee, which this year was Archbishop Hovnanian Derderian, the primate of the Western Diocese. So the Catholic bishop, interestingly enough, he talked about forgiveness. And in his words, he said, we as Christians must forgive, but you cannot forgive until there is repentance. That was interesting, huh? Now, you know that we've built a ministry around that forgiveness, the 7 times 77. And if you think about it, when Jesus was up on the cross, he gave us the ultimate example of forgiveness, right? He looked down from the cross and he said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Now, nobody repented, right? There was no repentance there. He forgave. So it was interesting that the bishop came up with this idea of that there has to be repentance. Well, obviously, you're talking to a bunch of Armenians, you're talking to a room full of Armenians, and you want to make sure that you're politically correct on that one, right? So you can't say, okay, we're forgiving the Turks when there's no repentance, there's no thing. Anyway, like I said, it's within a few minutes he had to express in this what he said. Now, what was really surprising for me was the Protestant minister. Okay, this is the one that they talk about. You need the church without the nation. You know, keep the nation out. Well, interestingly enough, his name was Matosian, Joseph Matosian. What he got up and talked about was a straight delivery from the Armenian lexicon. Okay, he talked about nationalism. He talked about being Armenian, about being united as Armenian people. I mean, bravo! It was beautiful. People probably in their heart applauded. They couldn't in church, but it was too void of any spirituality, which was interesting. Like I said, because really the Protestant claim, the reason they protest against the Armenian Orthodox Church is because that they find it to be too nationalistic. Well, this guy's message was very nationalistic, but you know. Yeah, the garbs are Protestant, so people like, oh yeah, that's the Protestant minister that's up there. Then came the opportunity for the celebrant, who this year was Archbishop Mushekh Mardirosyan. He is the prelate in the Western United States. He got up and he spoke a few things. It was very good. It was very, you know, like company man. You know, he quoted his superior, the Catholicos Adam, in what he did, and talked about the genocide, more historical kind of thing. You know, it was a few minutes. Now I want to get to Archbishop Hovnanian's comments. He was the main speaker that day. And I've got to tell you, I went with a lot of skepticism. I walked away very renewed because there was a couple things that were just beautifully said in his talk. First of all, his topic was the passage from our Lord Christ, who says, "Do not fear those who can destroy the body, but fear the one who can sentence the soul." And it was just so beautiful because he talked about really the soul, about how important it is to keep that spirit going. And yes, it was, there was a lot of nationalism, but it was weaved with this Christian message. And it got to me for a moment that really this is what we try to do with Armadoxy. There is this national flavor that comes in, and that sets the pace because you have a unique set of experiences that have transpired for the Armenian nation, but how do they respond to those unique set of circumstances? They respond via their faith. And interestingly enough, where did Archbishop Hovnanian end up? He says that each Badarak, each divine liturgy, each Holy Eucharist that we take connects us with the heroes of, say, Sardarabad or Avaride. And he concluded his words by quoting Christ's words, saying, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will build it." And I said, well, that's Christ. But he connected it. That's what got to me that night. He was able to connect the dots. And he said, destroy this temple and I will build it in 3 days. He said, many of the Armenians that were martyred, many of the Armenians that walked through the desert were repeating those words, destroy this temple and I will build it up. And that's the message. There is a resurrection. That's the message. You felt that resurrection in that song that I just played, right? Didn't you? That's a song of the diaspora. That's a song of resurrection. And so basically taking the ethnic experience, taking that national experience, and finding how do you cope with that is an application of your faith. Now think about that in your lives. You've got a set of circumstances that come to you in your lives, no matter where you are. Yes, it could be as wild as you want, on the far end, as genocide. Or it can be some of the difficulties that you're facing in life. It could be some of the difficulties that you're facing financially. How about health? How about health issues? How about relationship issues? Now the issue is, how do you take the tenets of your faith? How do you take everything that's in your box called faith, in your box called my religion, and apply those to your life, to those difficulties that you're having? And that's what I think he did so beautifully. He was saying that, okay, these people had this faith, and they took that faith and they applied it to this horrific set of circumstances called genocide. They said, do not fear the one who can take the body. Fear the one who can take the soul. They said, go ahead, destroy this temple, and I will build it again in 3 days. I think to me that was a very, very powerful statement. It was a way of putting it all together. And like I said, there were some personal reasons why I had to be there. I don't really go to these events because I feel like, I don't feel like the Eucharist is being served. But that night I felt that at least it was a first step for me. It was a first step for me, and that's a personal thing that really is beyond this. I know I talk a lot of personal stuff, but I had to share that one with you too. So that's how we celebrated. And that's how we celebrated the Eucharist and commemorated the martyrs of 1915. And of course, it doesn't end there. We continue. In fact, just today, right after this podcast, I'm going to get in the car. I'm going to be driving up the coast a bit to Santa Barbara, where I'm going to be speaking at the University of California at Santa Barbara and have a chance to meet with the wonderful students up there. This is, I think, the third or fourth year that I've been up there. I keep getting invited back, I think, because, first of all, they're just incredibly intelligent people. But besides that, I find them to be very creative. I go to a lot of Armenian genocide commemorations. The one in Santa Barbara. Now, don't quote me on this too loudly, but you can quote me internally. I think they're fantastic, and I think the reason for that is they're kind of isolated. They're 2-hour drive away from the Los Angeles community, so they're really on their own to produce something, and no outside influences. So it does get very creative, and I always enjoy going up there. And this year, it's the day after Armenian genocide commemoration on the 25th, which is also fitting too, because that's what it's all about. It's like not only being an Armenian and remembering the genocide on the 24th, but being an Armenian and remembering on the 25th, 26th, 27th. So symbolically, it's nice too. So I'm going to be heading up there and continuing this line of thought. And it's always been about, like, what do we do now? What's the next step? I'm going to take a break right now, have Anish with her pomegranate seeds, and when I get back, I'm going to share with you a book just came out. It's called Nowhere, A Story of Exile, and this is a book that talks about, well, what happened 25 years ago. I know it's all history, isn't it? 100 years ago, 25, 98 years. Here is Anish with today's pomegranate seeds.
Facing Genocide Awareness and Thinking Beyond Armenianness. Today is April 25. It's the day after April 24, our Armenian Genocide Day of Remembrance. The flags on the cars are off now. The Armenian political parties have all settled down, the April 24 programs are over and done with in our Armenian schools, and we're back to life as we know it. It feels like once a year, everyone comes out of the woodwork to show their Armenian-ness. The Facebook profile pictures change for April 24. Red, blue, and orange, eternal flames, and messages of never again started popping up a few days before the 24th. Don't get me wrong, there is nothing wrong with remembering our past. The atrocities committed by the Turks against our people were horrific, and there is no justification for it. We should never forget, but we should also not wallow in our past. Both of my grandmothers were genocide survivors. They both lost their families in front of their eyes, both came to the U.S. with nothing, and made something of their lives. I remember growing up in their shadow. They, who had experienced the unimaginable, didn't dwell on their past. Instead, they brought us up to love God, get an education, remember to vote, love this country, and be kind to others because truly, others had been kind to them. In other words, they focused on their lives in the present. The past was there, and yes, when we asked, they would share with us with tears. But they embraced this new country, the U.S., and taught us that you can bloom where you are planted. On my way to work yesterday, I read a text from my sister Susan in response to the day. It said, "Remembering and resurrecting are not annual occurrences, but embrace tragedy transformed to living love." We are a strong people with a proud heritage. It does us no good to say Armenians were the first nation to accept Christianity if we don't accept the Christian response to love one another and care for one another. We can't honestly say never again when there is a genocide going on today in Darfur, and we turn our backs on it because the victims are not our people. We can't look at the photos of our starving people and then turn our backs on those that are hungry in our community and globally. The time has come for resurrection. The best way for our people to acknowledge the genocide is to show that we are victorious over the systematic annihilation that was the dream of the Ottoman Turks. I am proud to be involved in our outreach organization, In His Shoes. This organization was started as a direct response to our Armenian genocide. We, as Armenians, have been there and done that. We have been hungry, hurt, homeless, poor, lonely, starving, friendless, and yet we are still here. And now it's time to give it back. Thank God for our resurrection by walking in the shoes of others who are suffering. So this April 22nd, we partnered with Essentia, Glendale's homeless shelter, and our crew prepared dinner for the residents there in memory of our past. This is in addition to our monthly homeless outreaches to downtown Skid Row, where we have fed and clothed the people there for close to 5 years now. We are fasting for Darfur and donating the money to Little Ripples program, which will give young displaced Darfuri children a chance at education. And just yesterday, a small group walked, not with flags and banners, but with their hearts full of love and compassion, 17.5 kilometers from Pasadena to the Armenian Genocide Monument, remembering one genocide by working towards stopping another one. We have the power. There is a beautiful remembrance banner I saw on Facebook yesterday. It says, "Cut my branches, burn my leaves, but you'll never touch my roots." Let's remember where our roots lie, in faith in God, hope for a brighter future, and love for one another, Armenian or not. This is Anush wishing you a pomegranate day filled with hope and ripe with possibilities.
I think it is so nice how things just kind of like always come down to this. We're on the same page and we go full circle and we come together. What does it mean? It means we're driven by principles and we're staying firm to those principles. Thank you, Anush. How beautiful was that? Just perfectly said. And it gives you a little bit of background. It gives you some insight on what's going on. It gives you a little bit of history, but more importantly, it tells you what we need to do. And just really appreciate it. A perfect pomegranate seed for a pomegranate group of people, you know? I mean, this is like the national fruit, is it? Or the national icon, symbolic icon for the Armenian people is the pomegranate. There is life. And in fact, do check out Anush's blog. Whatever you hear here on the next step, here. Whatever you H-E-A-R-H-E-R-E. Whatever you hear here. Sorry about that. I got to do it. My brain is like going all over the place. I mean, I'm trying to keep up with what's going on and thinking about what I'm going to talk about tonight, too. Anyway, what you hear here on the next step is also, there is a physical blog for it. You can read Anush's blog. It's inside the pomegranate. There is a link on today's show notes. And also there's some insight about the pomegranate itself. Why is the pomegranate so special? So I do invite you to explore that entire blog, as well as her real incredible custom jewelry, pomegranate and eye stuff. Great, great stuff. I told you I was going to share a book with you, share some information about a book that just came out. And let me do that in the final segment. Here's Susie to tell you how you can get involved with this podcast. I'll be back in like a couple minutes, do a little book review, and then we will be out to Santa Barbara and you back to your work. Here's Susie.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the fifth year of production and growing daily with new listeners around the globe. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's next step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that important announcement. Important because it's a way to say yes to all the good stuff that's going on. You know, when I get out there, and especially when I talk with young kids, when I'm at the college campuses and speaking with people about genocide commemoration, you can't believe it. In fact, last week when we were at the Baret Maronian movie, The Orphans of the Genocide, I was sitting next to an elderly woman who was taking some pride in explaining how she was 78 years old. She was the mother of a director and everything. And she just like looked at me and she says, can't we get away from these commemorations? We need to be talking about something new. And I wanted to tell her about In His Shoes, but actually she was just going on and on and on. And I just kind of, okay, yeah, I'll listen to this one. But really, In His Shoes, Epostle, what we're doing over here is that answer. It's the new answer. It's the answer to the Armenian church. It's the answer to the Armenian being. It's the answer to really life. Because what the secrets that you find in Armenian Orthodoxy are applicable to all aspects of life. Unfortunately, Armenians have never had that political power, have never been out on that world stage for people to really to look at them and say, wow, these people have a secret. Instead, we always are in the shadow of other people, and people say, oh yeah, those are Armenians. Their religion is something like the Greeks. Those are the Armenians. They had a genocide. It's something like the Holocaust. We're the something people, you know? Instead, let's back off of all the generalizations and the comparisons, and let's talk about who we are. I mean, an incredible group of people that have been faithful to this very simple message of love. And that message of love has been given to us by Jesus Christ, by the Son of God. And in that message, we find an opportunity for survival, but also for growth, putting aside fears and moving forward. I just did my new show. It's called Armenian Christianity Today. I invite you to check it out. It's on our website. It is a new show that's being produced by the diocese. It's about a 10-minute, 12-minute little commentary each week about things that are going on in the world. And I spoke about this idea of fear, how much we are in fear. Well, I brought it down to Armenian Christianity, but when you think about it, what is fear? It is what prevents us from actualizing and becoming who we can be. Think about that in all respects. You have fears, and that's why financially you're not making it. You have fears, and that's why your relationships are going sour. I mean, we've had fear because we've learned. Okay, you put your hand up to the stove, you burnt yourself. Okay, I don't want to get burnt again. Why not? Where's the risk? I'm not saying go stand in front of bullets. I'm not saying become a Superman. But I'm saying take that calculated risk and put fear aside. Now, this comes to us, if you think about it, it's a purely Armenian Orthodox idea. It's a group of people who had every reason to fear, but instead of fearing, they said, we will build ourselves on faith. And based on that faith, they're moving forward. And you see this. And this is a treasure. When you plug into In His Shoes, when you plug into Armadoxy, to Apostle, you're saying that, okay, I'm tired of the usual, same as should be, we should have done that. And instead, I'm ready to take the next step. I'm really ready to apply my faith. And there are many ways. As Susie says, you can support us by making a contribution. You could support us just by a very simple thing. You know, getting our message out to people, to your friends. Posting us on Facebook or sending it out to your email list. It's as simple as that. I mean, we have these movies, we have these videos, we have all kinds of educational programs that we're offering to the people, and it's made possible through your donation and through your, most importantly, through your prayers. It's those prayers that we feel over here. And believe me, for every one of you that pray for us, I'm praying for you as well, that God give you the strength, that God keep you in health and happiness all the time. So that together, partnering, we can work for His glory, we can work for the kingdom, and make sure that that kingdom is in the lives of people all throughout the earth. I mentioned we're going to be talking about a book. Let me share that with you. It's called Nowhere. It's a story of exile. A couple weeks ago, we were invited to what do they call it? A debut? I'm not sure really what it was called, but we went out to City Hall in Los Angeles. Now, the Los Angeles City Hall, for me as a child, was very important because that was the Daily Planet building. We used to watch the old Supermans with George Reeves, and that was the Daily Planet building where Clark Kent worked, was the Los Angeles City Hall. And it was exciting for me because I lived in Los Angeles. And every so often I'd look over there and I'd see the Daily Planet building. It was way later that I figured out that the Daily Planet was really the City Hall. And for a cheap production, they found this little place and they used it as the Daily Planet. But it was, I had never been up to the top floor. We went up to the top floor. And it was, there's an outside window that overlooks the entire city of Los Angeles. That in itself was breathtaking. But the more important thing, the reason why we were up there, we were going to listen to the author of this new book, Ana Asfazadurian Turcot. Now that's a mouthful, isn't it? Asfazadurian, I would imagine that's her maiden name. But a very lovely lady who's 35 years old. And the importance of that is that she was 10 years old when the pogroms in Baku took place. In other words, they were exiled from their homes. And so when we talk about genocide, you know, back in 1915, you got to realize that this is an ongoing struggle. And for the people in Baku, they were exiled. Of course, Baku being the capital of Azerbaijan, a made-up country, part of that pan-Turkism and everything. Anyway, the politics, you probably know better than I do. Check it out on, Google Azerbaijan. You'll find out what it's all about. But Stalin created this area, and Stalin created a lot of problems for the Armenians living in that area too, particularly a little bit south in Artsakh. referred to as Nagorno-Karabakh. Now, what's interesting is back in 1988, and every 10, 20 years, this small little region was proclaiming its independence, was struggling. Now, the majority of the people who live in Nagorno-Karabakh were Armenian, or still are Armenian, but it was annexed to Azerbaijan, this small little area. In 1988, they were looking for their freedom to break off. After all, they are an independent enclave over there, and they were Armenian. And again, I don't want to get into the politics as much as I want to get into the story, or what this young lady has to offer us. So she was 10 years old. Let me read the back. It says, Ana Asfazadurian Turkat lost her childhood to ethnic cleansing. In 1988, she was a 10-year-old girl living in the seaside city of Baku in the Soviet Republic of Azerbaijan. Like any other young girl, she had a childhood aspirations, crushes, and dreams. That entire life was swept away as a majority Muslim Azeri population drove the minority Christian Armenians out of the country using terror and violence. Now, this is about Azerbaijan. What I referred to was in Karabakh, the majority being Armenian. The reason I make that connection, because this is all taking place right at the same time, the Karabakh movement right at 1988, and then, of course, that has repercussions for the Armenian populations that are in other areas. Her family was forced to flee for their lives to Armenia, a neighboring republic still reeling from the massive earthquake and the unpreparedness for hundreds of thousands of refugees fleeing Azeri-orchestrated pogroms. Once there, she found herself an outsider, a nationless girl surviving in an unheated basement and facing discrimination again, this time by her own people. Yep. I'm going to invite you to read this book. It's a nice read. It's in paperback, and it's available, I believe, on Amazon. We will definitely put a link on our show notes today. Definitely as Sardarabad Books, where we purchased our copy that evening. But just a wonderful, wonderful read, and important bit of history to really put it all together. Like I said, if you want to talk about the Armenian Genocide 100 years ago, it's important also to talk about what's going on today, and certainly 25 years ago. This was an important time in my life, too. 25 years ago, I was a young priest who was just getting involved in causes of justice, in peace, and discrimination. And it was a young man at the same time, probably he was my age, his name was Johnny Sumner, and he had remembered the civil rights movement here in the United States and was helping me. He was an African-American who had married an Armenian girl, member of our parish, and he was helping me at the time in organizing these demonstrations that were taking place at the Soviet consulate and throughout the streets of San Francisco. This is late 1980s. So there's a personal story, personal side for me too, and one of the reasons why I went to it. I would highly recommend that you read this. It is called Nowhere, A Story of Exile. Well, we are at the end of today's show. I want to thank you for joining us. I'm on my way to Santa Barbara. To all of you listeners up in the Santa Barbara area, I'll be up there in a couple hours. UC Santa Barbara is the venue tonight. Listen, I want to ask you to join us throughout the week. We're at Epostle. That's really easy to remember. Apostle with an E. That's Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. And of course, do join us at the mothership in hisshoes.org. Check out that video, the one that's called Leveraging Love, and share it with your friends. Hey, for the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, for Vi, our webman, for Honest with her pomegranate seeds, this is Father Boskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.